Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
A reading from the fourth canto, chapter 23, text number 4. Tatrapi adabhya Niyamo Vakhanasa Susamate Arabdha Ugra Tapasi Yata Sa Vijaye Pura Tatap Yadhabhya Niyamo Yadhabhya Vakhanasa susamate susamate arabdya ugra tapasi arabdya yata svabhijaye pura tatrapya dabhya niyamo tatrapya dabhya vakhanasa susamate Arabdha ugra tapasi Jyata svabhijaye pura Tatrapya dabhya niyamo Vakhanasa susammate Susammate Arabdha ugra tapasi Arabdha ugra Yatha sa vijaye pura. Ladies. Tatra, there, api, also, adhabhya, severe, niyama, austerities, vakhanasa, rules and regulations of retired life, Susamate.
Susamate.
Perfectly recognized.
Perfectly
recognized. Arabdha. Beginning.
Beginning.
Ugra.
Severe.
Severe.
Tapasi.
Austerity.
Austerity.
Yata.
As much as.
Svabhijaye. In conquering the world. Pura. Formerly. Translation. After retiring from family life, Maharaj Prithu strictly followed the regulations of retired life and underwent severe austerities in the forest. He engaged in these activities as seriously as he had formerly engaged in leading the government and conquering everyone. Please repeat. After retiring from family life, Maharaj Prithu strictly followed the regulations of retired life and underwent severe austerities in the forest. He engaged in these activities as seriously as he had formerly engaged in leading the government and conquering everyone. Purport. As it is necessary for one to become very active in family life, similarly, after retirement from family life, it is necessary to control the mind and senses. This is possible when one engages himself fully in the devotional service of the Lord. Actually, the whole purpose of the Vedic system, the Vedic social order, is to enable one to ultimately return home back to Godhead. The Grihastha Ashrama is a sort of concession combining sense gratification with a regulative life. It is to enable one to easily retire in the middle of life and engage fully in austerities in order to transcend material sense gratification once and for all. Therefore, in the vanaprastha stage of life, tapasya or austerity is strongly recommended. Maharaj Prithu followed exactly all the rules of vanaprastha life, which is technically known as vaikhanasa. Ashrama. The word vaikhanasa susamvate is significant because in vanaprastha life, the regulative principles are also to be strictly followed. In other words, Maharaj Prithu was an ideal character in every sphere of life. Mahajanab jena katasa panta. One should follow in the footsteps of great personalities. Thus, by following the exemplary character of Maharaj Prithu, one can become perfect in all respects while living the life, while living this life, or while retired from active life. Thus, after giving up this body, one can become liberated and go back to Godhead. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. What we're seeing here is a very wonderful example, because what this verse is saying is that with the same energy, the same determination, the same success that he had as a king, he took that and he went into vanaprastha life. And he used that same shakti, that same energy. There was a devotee who wrote Srila Prabhupada who was newly married and he wanted to take sannyas. And this was quite common in the early days of our movement. So Prabhupada wrote him and said, I will not give sannyas to anyone who's first not ideal as a grihastha. So the same principle was there. show that you can be successful in this ashram, and then you can become, naturally, you'll be successful in the next ashram. But the way many of us had it in those days was that if we fail in the Grihastha ashram, that means we're qualified to take sannyas. That's what it was like. Prabhupada, it is not working. My wife and I, we just throw pots at one another, so I guess I should take sannyas. Now, there is some truth to this, because one of Prabhupada's secretaries told me that during the time he was secretary, he got many, many of these sannyas letters. This was quite common. So he told me this is how it would go. He'd open up a letter, he'd read it, and all he would say to Prabhupada is say, Srila Prabhupada, another sannyas letter. And Prabhupada would say, who's asking? And then he would give the name, and Prabhupada would either say, okay, or tell him he's a nonsense, depending on who it was. So actually, sometimes Prabhupada did allow it. But he also only allowed it if the wife was agreeable. And we have to understand the context of that time. The context of that time is that we needed generals, and the sannyasis were the generals. So we were fighting a war, and that's the way Prabhupada fought it. So he did allow some men to do it. But in general, no. And there was a reason he didn't allow it, because it was encouraging irresponsibility. So I will read you one letter of one irresponsible Grihastha. And you may laugh at this and you may think this is weird, but the weird that he had a, just newly married with a young child and wanted to take sannyas. I don't know. Does that sound weird to you? Well, those days didn't sound weird at all. So I have to explain the context. The context is, or was, number one, we were fighting a war and we had a mission, and everyone was giving their life to the mission. So your average Grihastha, their living accommodation was either living separately in the temple from their wife, or they had one room in the temple, or they had one room in the house next to the temple, and there was nothing in that room. There was not a chair, there wasn't a desk, there wasn't a bed, just a room. So basically, they were already living like sannyasis. Or I think actually they were living more austere than most sannyasis. I don't want to criticize anyone, but it was very austere then. Of course, we were young. So we were dedicated fully. That was the mission. We were creating a revolution. So in Prabhupada's presence, anyone who saw Prabhupada could testify that in Prabhupada's presence, you just saw him and you just wanted to give everything. Give up your child, your four-month-old child, give up your wife. And believe me, to have that room in the house next door to the temple was an opulence in those days. Because brahmachari life meant wall to wall from like across the room. This in Los Angeles, there was a room almost this big, just filled with brahmacharis. And when I was a young brahmachari, you didn't even have your own clothes. They would just get put in the laundry. When it come back, you would pick a dhoti and a kurta and a sweater. But, it wasn't yours. So to have your own room and your own clothes was like a major step up. Sounds funny, but it's true. It was very austere. So that was the mood. We just wanted to surrender. So in Prabhupada's presence, you just wanted to give everything. So these devotees would get inspired, right? By the fact that they wanted to surrender and by the fact that they didn't like their wives. Both. It wasn't just one, right, Lakshmiman? It was a combination. And by the fact that if you were a sannyasi, you could get your own room and mahaprasadam and one servant, which was basically unheard of in those days. So it was a combination of, with some people, one was stronger than the other. So here's a letter. I note that you are requesting to take the sannyas order of life, but if you have got a wife, that will be difficult. If someone devotee has got wife, that would not become a very popular policy to grant so easily sannyas. And if your wife wants many children, that is the only purpose for getting married to wife, to have facility for sex life. Otherwise, what is the use for taking so much botheration of married life? So now you're a married man. That decision you have made, that is great responsibility, and that should not become so light mattered that anyone may think, oh, let me get married, and if I don't like my wife, or there is anything difficult, I will write Prabhupada for taking sannyas. Finished. Because Prabhupada was getting these letters. Like, this was like quite common. And you may think, that's weird. But we didn't think it was weird. Did we? We just wanted to surrender. Never mind wife, let her go to hell. That is not a very nice proposal. Married life is serious business. If you have taken wife, you must be completely responsible for her throughout your life. She shall always serve and obey you without fail, and you shall instruct her in Krishna consciousness and act as her spiritual master. Otherwise, without husband, women have great difficulty to make spiritual advancement. So if we have to develop a perfect society of scientific arrangement for making spiritual progress, then so many women will be there, so what shall we do? They have also come to Krishna. We cannot reject them. Therefore, I have advised my students to get themselves married. I was householder. My Guru Maharaj was lifelong brahmachari. But we are doing the same work of preaching Krishna consciousness. So what is the difference? Grihastha and brahmachari. Actually, sannyas means that he has given everything to Krishna. So practically, you are already sannyas. This was a common thing Prabhupada said to so many grihasthas when they wanted sannyas. He said, you already are. I mean, look what they were doing. They were living in the temple. They were engaged about 18 hours a day. I mean, we didn't sleep much in those days. 18, 19, I mean, yeah. The temple, yeah, those days, we 5-6 hours. You're lucky if you got six. The only difference between the grihasthas and the brahmacharis was the room they lived in, basically. Right, Lakshmiman? Was it really any other difference? What we did? Since we did the same thing. We had the same lifestyle. It was just where we slept at night was different, basically. And you might have a child. My Guru Maharaj was lifelong brahmachari, but we were doing the same work of preaching. So what is the difference? Grihastha and brahmachari. Actually, sannyas means he's given everything to Krishna. So practically, you are already sannyas. But if you've got wife and she desires to raise children, she will not be very happy if you go away. That is not our business, to create havoc. If wife is strong, she will appreciate if you take sannyas. But if there is a question at all, that should be avoided. So Hansa Duda arranged to take sannyas without telling his wife. And his wife came storming into Prabhupada's room, and she was upset. And then Prabhupada said, I never told him he could take sannyas. And then Prabhupada told Hansa Duda, no, the wife has to obey, and Prabhupada said, she'll never want me to take sannyas. Either, you know, I'm 25 or 105, she won't want. So anyway, when she was talking to Prabhupada, she came into Prabhupada's room and said, Prabhupada, she was so frustrated and so angry, she said, I hate everyone and I hate everything. Prabhupada said, oh, very good. You're making spiritual advancement. Hare Krishna. Anyway, he took sannyas, and then later he gave up sannyas. It was a very common, you know, take it and give it up. The household life wasn't working well, give that up. Then the sannyas life wasn't working well, so give that up, and, you know, try another wife. And that didn't work well, so let's try vanaprastha, you know. You know, like that. That was the problem, and so Prabhupada knew that. It is not our business to create havoc. If wife is strong, she will appreciate if you take sannyas. But if there is question at all, that should be avoided. Just like I never liked my wife. But I knew it was my duty to stick until my sons were grown up. You know, Prabhupada wanted to accept another wife. His father said, no, it's good you don't like your wife. Prabhupada said, no, I'm not attracted to her. I want another wife. And his father said, no, then you'll see Krishna as attractive if you're not attracted to your wife. The Prabhupada said, but I knew it was my duty to stick until my sons were grown up, and then I left. But if you give your wife one child, she will be happy, and she will have lifelong occupation. That you must consider. But at least you can wait until I come there next time. Then we shall see further. It was just Prabhupada's way of pacifying him, giving him some hope, but that wasn't Prabhupada's intention. So, this was a prominent mentality during that time. Now there's a really nice morning walk in which something similar is being brought up. And the devotees were asking Prabhupada, the devotee asked the question, Srila Prabhupada, how do you get determination to follow the regulative principles? And Prabhupada said, by following the principles. So the devotee thought, Prabhupada didn't understand my question. I was asking how to get the determination to follow the principles. So Prabhupada said, you can't ask that question. So what did Prabhupada mean? Well, well, here's a nice example. Lakshmi Mandana knows the answer, but I want to give an example. Husbands, I don't advise you doing this. This would be an atom bomb in your relationship with your wife. So I'm telling you what not to do. Don't ask your wife this question. Dear Devi, I want to ask you, how can I get the determination to stay your husband and stay with you? Is that a good question to ask? Ladies, is that a good question? Is that the atom bomb question? How can I have the determination to stay with you? And she's thinking, what kind of question is that? So that's the context which Prabhupada answered the question. You already took a vow, so why are you asking now how to get the determination to follow the vow? You already took it. You can't ask that question. That's the point. Does that make sense? Once you take a vow, that's it. You've taken it. So you don't ask how to be determined. The vow itself is the determination. That's the commitment, right? So then Prabhupada's saying, you follow the principles, it'll strengthen the commitment. Not that it is the commitment, it'll strengthen it. That's how you become stronger, by following. So say, apply it to grihastha life, apply it to brahmachari life, vanaprastha or sannyas. How do I get the strength? It's the commitment. It's when you make the commitment. That's where it comes from. And then by following it, you become stronger. You become more committed. I had a wonderful conversation last month. I was in Bangalore. So I was staying with some devotees and I said, what's the divorce rate in India? They said, probably 1%. I said, what about Bollywood? They said, same. I said, why? They said, because when we're young, we are trained that marriage is for life. That's just our conditioning. So when we enter it, that's it. The commitment is so deep because as little kids, that's how we were trained. So we work it out because there's no way out of it. You have to work it out. There's no back door to get out. So there's a very nice story in the Bhagavatam, which is for us as Westerners, those who are Westerners, a little difficult to understand. Maharshi Priyabrata was asked to get married and he didn't want to. But he was the right man to rule the universe. So even Brahma had to come and say, no, you have to do this. So Prabhupada says in the purport, he didn't want to do it, but he did a really good job. Basically, Prabhupada said, he was detached, but he never presented himself as detached to his wife. But he was actually detached. How he presented himself was as a dutiful husband. So I had never understood this, because from the Western point of view, you wouldn't want to tell your wife, I really don't like you, but I'm going to stay with you and be a dutiful husband. It's like, you know, she'd say, okay, let's go into therapy. You have problems here. And the therapist is like, you know, you have to like your wife, right? You can't stay together if you don't like your wife. What did Prabhupada say? I didn't like my wife, but I didn't leave. It's a different mentality, isn't it? It's a very dharmic mentality. So what is this verse telling us? That was Maharaj Priyavrata a good husband? Yes. Was he a good king? Yes. Did he want to be a king? No. Did he want to be a husband? No. He was a better husband and a better king even than someone who might have wanted to get married. Why? Because when the person wants to get married and it's not working, what happens? He starts thinking, where's the back door? Right? Well, how can we stay together? Because I don't like you anymore. Right? It's very common. But you know, well, after being married to you for the chemistry, I could see, you know, it's just like, we don't get along. So this was coming to Prabhupada all the time. You know, Prabhupada, we don't get along. Or Prabhupada, I took sannyas, I can't do it. Very common, very common. So here we see there's a higher principle. It's the dharmic principle. And ladies, it's actually better to have a husband who's dharmic than one who just likes you, even if it doesn't make sense according to Western psychology, because he'll be a better husband. He'll stay with you. He'll take care of the kids, and he'll be nice to you, even if he doesn't like you. And the one who likes you may not like you when Bhaktin Betty walks in the temple. She may look better, and the next week he may be gone. But the dharmic husband won't, even if he likes Bhaktin Betty. He won't, because this is his. And that's why Prabhupada said, ideal grihastha can become ideal sannyasi. Right? Because you want the dharmic husband, then he takes sannyas, and what happens? He won't give it up. Right? That's the principle. Westerners, it's really difficult to get that one. That's a hard one. Dharma is higher than what I like doing. I'm going to read another letter. This is a classic letter. This letter was so famous during the back, well, we say in America, back in the day. This letter was an amazing letter. Another devotee wanted to leave his wife. And this is a three-paragraph letter. It's an amazing letter. This letter, I don't know if newer devotees are even aware of this letter, so I thought I would read it. I actually came across it by accident, and then I remembered it. I was living with this devotee. He was in my temple, so I'm kind of familiar with the whole context of what's going on. He was living separate from his wife in the temple, and you could set your watch by his sadhana. Seriously. He was clockwork sadhana. You know, when he got up, it was 2 o'clock. When he finished his rounds, it was 4:14:30. It was like that, you know. When he started reading Bhagavad Gita, it was 5:21. He was an amazing devotee. And he was living separate from his wife. So he was in this mood of renunciation. And he's looking at his wife and his kid and all that, thinking, it's tying me down. I could be, you know, saving the world, but here I have to be tied down. So he wrote to Prabhupada to give up his wife. For these questions arising between married husband and wife, you are requesting me to leave your wife and take vanaprastha order of life. For these questions you must consult and take permission from presidents in GBC. Yes, I know your wife. I won't mention her name because I don't want to embarrass anybody. And I know she is very serious and advanced disciple. But now you are married to her. There is some obligation according to our Krishna consciousness or Vedic system. So we weren't thinking there was any obligation. We thought the obligation was, well, if you advance, you renounce. Advancement doesn't mean to stay and work it out and tolerate and deal with it. These things cannot be taken so lightly, otherwise the whole thing will become a farce. Simply get married without considering what is the serious nature of married life, and then if there is a little disturbance, or if I do not like my wife or my husband, let me go away. Everyone else is doing like that. So you see what's going on? If Prabhupada allows it, creates a standard, right? Now, the other problem that was going on at the time is the sannyasis were preaching to the grihasthas to leave their wives. It's married life is maya. That was very strongly being preached. In classes, outside of classes, in between classes, you know, everywhere. Come with us, you're stuck in grihastha life. And they rub it in. Your wife is just the personification of maya. You're just attached to those tigers and jackals, children. And there's the bus, the shining bus with the effulgent brahmacharis and the sannyasis waiting for you. Why don't you just step on the bus? That was going on. And nobody was, and Prabhupada was the only one who knew something was wrong. Nobody else figured it out. You say that your association together was hindering your advancement, that Krishna consciousness marriage system should not be taken in that way, that if there is any botheration, that means something is hindering my spiritual progress. No. Once it is adopted, the grihastha life, even it may be troublesome at times, it must be fulfilled as my occupational duty. Of course, it is better to remain unmarried, but so many women are coming. We cannot reject them. If someone comes to Krishna, it is our duty to give them protection. Krishna has informed us in the Bhagavad Gita, even women and sudras, others, anyone can take refuge in him. So the problem is there. Women must have a husband to give protection. If the women can remain unmarried, if there is suitable arrangement in the temple to protect them, like in the Christian church, there is the nunnery, for systematic program of engaging the ladies and protecting them, that's nice. But if there is sex desire, how to control it? That went in one ear and out the other in those days. But see, you know, now in retrospect we see, if there is sex, how to control it? It's called grihastha life. Women are normally lusty, more lusty than men, and they are weaker sex. It is difficult for them to make spiritual advancement without the help of husband. That means women want the home, the family. For so many reasons, our women must have husband. That's all right. But if once they have got a husband, he goes away so quickly, that will not be very happy for them. Now, I do not know the situation in your case. I'm simply giving you general policy. We should never think our so-called advancement as being conditioned by or dependent upon some set of material circumstances, such as marriage, vanaprastha, this or that. So the whole idea was, I'm married, I can't become Krishna conscious. If I take sannyas, then I can be Krishna conscious. If I just get on that bus, all problems solved. Is that true? When you're 22, you think it's true. Because there wasn't the whole sannyas graveyard in front of you. Now it's behind us. So everybody thought, I just take sannyas, solves the problem. Right? It's like the answer isn't in me, it's in the external situation. That was the consciousness. Someone would write Prabhupada a letter and say, I want to take sannyas, you know, grihasthas. And he'd say, Prabhupada, like, why do you think you need a pole to preach? You know, they'd say, Prabhupada, I want to take sannyas to preach. And he'd say, why do you need a pole to preach? So this was the idea. If I just carry a pole, then I'll be an empowered preacher. If I wear saffron, you know, that was the whole consciousness. So Prabhupada's making the point here, you think there's some like magic bullet? You just change an ashram and like you change? No, you don't change. You're the same. You have the same problem. The ashram's not going to change your problem. You have to change it. So there's this saying, nice saying, when you squeeze an orange, juice comes out. Right? Why? Because juice is inside. Right? So when you're squeezed, what comes out of you? What's inside of you? So our consciousness, as Prabhupada's saying here, is no, we think it's not what's inside of me is not coming out, it's the circumstance that's creating the problem. Or the circumstance that's the solution. Sannyasa is the solution. Can't make it with my wife, I can't be Krishna conscious at home. Sannyasa is the solution. And Prabhupada would say, no. Solution is you adopting to this situation. You're not going to change just by doing that. Mature understanding of Krishna consciousness means that whatever condition of life I am in at present, this is Krishna's special mercy upon me. Therefore, let me take advantage in the best way possible to spread this Krishna consciousness movement and conduct my spiritual master's mission. If I consider my own personal progress or happiness or any other thing personal, that is material consideration. I don't like my wife, I want to leave it. I'll be happy. Personal consideration. If there was an unhappy adjustment for becoming married, why you got married at all? And now Prabhupada's saying, you were a brahmachari and you weren't happy. You thought, I'll get married and I'll be happy. Now you're married and you think, I'll become a sannyasi, then I'll be happy. It's very, very immature understanding, but it's common. And the reason I'm bringing it up, although maybe not so relevant now, I think the seeds of the consciousness of this are still there within us. That if I change something outside of me, something inside of me is going to change. It's the other way around. The problem is not outside. The problem is inside. It always was. It always will be. It's never outside. It's inside. What is done is done. That is a fact. I am only pointing out that once before you did something without proper study of your real responsibility, now you're contemplating again some drastic action in a similar manner. Therefore, consider in this light. There is one verse from Bhagavad Gita. Yasman no vijhate loka loka no vijhate chaya harshamarsha bhayodhega muktaya sa chame priya. He for whom no one is put into difficulty and who is not disturbed by anxiety, who is steady in happiness and distress, is very dear to me. Isn't this interesting? That a man would think, I can leave my wife with a small child and take sannyas and not even think of the difficulty it would put her in, and that person is a devotee. Does that make sense? Then Prabhupada's pointing this out here. Prabhupada's saying, hello, do you know what a devotee is? He doesn't put anyone into difficulty. Did you forget that? Now reflect, we can reflect in our life, how many people have we put into difficulty? In America, when your computer doesn't work, you dial a local number and you get some Bengali or some guy in Bangalore. Hello, my name is John. May I have your name? And they ask you like 25 questions until they find out they're the wrong person. You have to go to the next one. He goes, hello, my name is Sam. And they ask you the same 25 questions. And then he can't figure out what's wrong, so he has to go to the supervisor. And you're getting a little upset, right? And sometimes you get angry. Has that ever happened to anybody? And they can't solve your problem because they're not that qualified. And so it's interesting. The Shishastika prayers, Trinadapi Sunichena Toroiva Sishana, are chanted in most temples every day. So if you've been a devotee 10 years, multiply by 365, you chanted that verse 3,000 times. In my case, multiply it by 40 years, and I've chanted it how many times? You know. And I'm on the phone with this guy, and I'm screaming at him, give me your supervisor! Give me someone who speaks English! Does that shloka have any relevance? No, he's just a stupid computer guy, you know, in Bengal, you know. So that's the point Prabhupada's making. That often in Krishna consciousness, there are principles, and they get so well isolated from our life, and they don't integrate, and we don't even see it. To the point that a man could leave his wife and child, write a letter to your spiritual master, who's the acharya of the whole movement. He's got better things to do than talk to you about leaving your wife and four-month-old daughter or son, right? I mean, in retrospect, would you do that? Would you write a letter like that to Prabhupada? I think you'd be pretty embarrassed, wouldn't you? There was this lack of integration, of taking responsibility, of understanding. Here's a principle. Devotees don't put others in anxiety. And how it didn't integrate in our life. And if you look at it, as we do this seminar on humility, and I just ask the devotees, how tolerant are you? Who have you yelled at lately? Who have you been impatient with lately? And it's shocking. It's actually shocking. What have you been complaining about lately? It's actually shocking to see how much we complain and how intolerant we are. And every day we chant that verse, more tolerant than a tree. Wow, what does that mean? So I was talking to Borjan. I said, so how does tolerance fit into humility? He says, tolerance is the dharma of humility. It's the essence. I said, wow. You know, it's very interesting if you start contemplating. So that's the point Prabhupada's making here. You're putting this person into difficulty. So then he says, one mistake of judgment often made by the neophyte devotee is that any time there is some disturbance or some difficulty, they are considering that the conditions or the external circumstances under which the difficulty took place are the cause of the difficulty itself. That is not the fact. In this material world, there's always difficulty, no matter the situation or that. Simply by changing my status of occupation or life, it won't help anything. Wow. Therefore, simply because the real fact is that if there is any difficulty with others, that is my lack of Krishna consciousness, not theirs. It's like Prabhupada's the like Adi self-improvement guru right here. If there's any lack of, there's any difficulty, right here, there it is. If you study self-improvement, these are the Paribhasa Sutras. Take responsibility. It's your life. Get it together. No one else's. Don't blame anyone else. And Prabhupada says it right here. In the material world, there's always some difficulty, no matter in this situation or that. Simply by changing status, occupation, that will not help anything. The real fact is that if any difficulty with others, that is my lack of Krishna consciousness, not theirs. Is that clear? Krishna says his dearest devotee is one who does not put others into difficulty. In fact, who puts no one other into difficulty. Try to judge the matter on these points, whether or not you're putting your wife or yourself in some difficulty. Isn't that interesting? It's just sometimes it's so difficult to take something we understand and see in our life that we don't understand it. I ask devotees this question. It's an interesting question to ask yourself. I say, if an old high school friend came to live with you and knew nothing about that you were a devotee, knew nothing about your life, and you could not tell them what you believed, if they just lived with you, would they understand what you believe by watching what you do? By looking at your life, would they, in other words, you could tell them what you believe, right? But would they understand it if you couldn't tell them just by seeing, you know, I'm on the telephone screaming at this guy in Bengal because he can't fix my computer. So would they think, oh, Mahatma believes in tolerance and kindness and sympathy? No, they wouldn't think that. They think, yeah, Mahatma's just like his father. His father did the same thing. You know? So it's an interesting question. In other words, how integrated are we? Well, if we're integrating it, then if someone's with us, they can understand what we believe by seeing how we live. The fact is, a lot of people say what they believe, but it's not what they believe. They're saying what they want to believe, but they don't believe it because it's not in their life. So Prabhupada's making this point. We don't have time. The letter goes on. If you want to read it, it's the letter is. It's to a devotee named Madhukar. If you just Google Vanaprastha on the folio, go to correspondence, you think it's a 1974 letter. This is an amazing letter. It goes on. So I think we should stop and take some time for questions or comments. Yes?
So there's always swings in the country. Gone by the days of yore, people were taking sannyas at a drop of a hat. So, do your opinion is in these days in ISKCON, is it too difficult to take sannyas? Because it seems that they put so many, so for people who are now in a vanaprastha situation, they've put so many hurdles practically that you have to jump to take sannyas these days. In your day, you can go up to Prabhupada, say, Prabhupada, give me sannyas. He would say, okay, and that was it. And these days, you can't even approach your guru and say, my guru, is it okay if I take sannyas? Well, yeah, it's okay with me, but, you know.
Yeah. I'll say a few things. Less sannyasis are falling down now because of it. That's one thing. Prabhupada was asked the question, you know, you give someone sannyas, you've given so many people sannyas and they fell down, so didn't you know? Prabhupada said, I perfectly situated them. I situated them properly to take sannyas and they misused their independence. But you see, in the life of ISKCON, when there were a lot of fall downs, and at some point Prabhupada said, no more sannyas. Actually, it first started this way. There are three things Prabhupada stopped doing. First, if you wanted to get married, you'd have to write Prabhupada, and he would bless it. So after so many divorces, he said, don't ask me anymore. You know, why do you want a blessed divorce, right? So he said, just ask your temple president, right? That was step one. Then there was brahminical initiation. Then people were falling down at a certain point and said, okay, we can't give this so easily. We have to be more strict. He did the same thing with sannyas. So, you know, he was looking at it. One devotee tells a story and said, Prabhupada, why did you come up with this number 16? Was 16 somewhere in the Shastra? And Prabhupada said, no, I came up with it. He said, why? He said, I was just experimenting. Tried 64, didn't work. We tried 32. So Prabhupada was doing a lot of testing, you know, seeing. And so then he would see, okay, we need generals, but the generals are falling. And then Prabhupada said, look it, his god brothers went to England, right? They really couldn't do much. And then two or three grihasthas go to England and they meet George Harrison and the Beatles and then Krishna consciousness and do a number one record. I mean, you know. And Prabhupada said, what my sannyasi godbrothers couldn't do, the grihasthas did. So then the whole game changes. So Prabhupada had this disciple, Karandar. And Karandar was like, before the GBC, he was like in Los Angeles, which was the world headquarters. He was Prabhupada's main man. He was incredibly intelligent and and my friends, who I consider incredibly good managers, say, compared to Karandar, I'm nothing. So Karandar was the man. And he dedicated his life to Prabhupada, and he was married and had a child, and he wrote Prabhupada a letter, said, can I take sannyas? And Prabhupada said, you are way more than sannyas. And even when Tripurari was doing book distribution, he wanted to take sannyas. Prabhupada said the same thing. He's already doing... That's a story. Prabhupada was in the garden with all these sannyasis, right? And Tripurari was a brahmacharya, and he was coming or going on book distribution. It came to Prabhupada's attention, and Prabhupada said, he's doing way more than all of you sannyasis by distributing books, by pushing on this book distribution. So, you know, Prabhupada's concept of sannyas may have also been different than ours. A lot of, you know, people who wanted to take it may have wanted it for various reasons, but some not good. But I think it's good that we're strict. It's not like you can't preach if you're not a sannyasi, right? And you know, when a sannyasi falls, it's a big thing. It's a big thing if a sannyasi falls. So you want to make sure. There was a man, in the early days, one sannyasi fell. He was a guru, and there was a man, he was an elderly man. And he had not taken initiation. At that point he said, I will not take initiation from anyone who's not over 60 years old. And he's probably like 55 at that time. And that was his, you know, wisdom of life. So, you know. And then you have people like Borijan Prabhu, Rabindra Sarup, so many who are, you know, they're sannyasis, but they're wearing white. Prabhupada said, white, that is the color of the Babaji dress. So sometimes he would say, look at, you're more than sannyasi, you're living with a wife, and you're not falling down. So sometimes he would see it that way. You're more than sannyasi, you're the wife and child, and you're doing as much as a sannyasi. You have the temptation, you're not. So that Prabhupada would see it that way. You know, there's a nice story in Gaudiya Math. All these big sannyasis, big program, and Bhaktisiddhanta is going to pick someone to speak. He picks a grihastha to speak, and all the sannyasis are deflated. And he says, you're all puffed up. He said, this grihastha, he's a better preacher than you are. So, you know, and Prabhupada was here in India, and who led the kirtan? Jamuna. Let the woman lead the kirtan. Let the Indian see a woman, American woman lead. So, you know. Then you sometimes see, I mean, you know, preaching in America, a lot of times preaching in America, you're dealing with families all the time, and sometimes being grihastha is better. And, you know, so there's so many considerations. Time, place, circumstance, individual. You want to say something?
I have two stories. One of
the Oh, yeah, let's hear it. Microphone's coming. I don't think it's on. On the bottom, there's a switch.
Yes? Yes. We were in Prabhupada's room, and Srila Prabhupada was discussing how in Vedic culture, you could always tell someone's position by their dress. So he was talking about how women wear red in their hair, and then, you know, they're in, you know, brahmacharis wear the tail, etc. He had many different things. He was talking about how you could spot somebody's position just by their dress. But he said in our movement, everyone dressed simply. He said, we dress simply because what is the need? So one of my god sisters raised her hand and she said, Srila Prabhupada, but what happens if your husband buys you nice saris? Are you not allowed to wear them? And so he said, you can wear them when your husband is there. He said, but otherwise, who are you trying to attract? Krishna is not attracted by beautiful saris. So then he said, the men, everybody should see you as mother. And so she made a face. And he looked at one sannyasi who was sitting next to him as if to say, why is she making that face? So then she answered. She said, well, they call us mother, but they don't treat us like mother. And so then he responded and he said, I think it's, they think that prayer, you know, where they say, whenever I think of sex life, I spit on it. He said, they think whenever I think of women, I should spit on them.
Prabhupada said that?
No, this sannyasi was telling Prabhupada this. So then Prabhupada closed his eyes and he thought for a few seconds and then he said, first, let them become free from sex desire. Then let them spit. So that was one. The other one was an experience I had when I took some of my students to Anna Prashadam at a family's house in Toronto. And it was an Indian family, quite older people. And the girls were looking at their picture albums. So they had picture albums of their wedding. So one of the girls said to the man, how long did you know your wife before you got married? He said, that was the first time I saw her, was at the wedding. So the girls were like, oh my God, you know, shocked. And they said, how could you do that? You know, how could you do that? And he said, well, the way we look at it is you're destined to get a certain amount of happiness and a certain amount of suffering. And that's going to come to you one way or the other. So if you act dharmically, then it'll end. You get the karma, it goes away. But if you don't act dharmically, you'll get the same amount of suffering and enjoyment in this life, and then again, there'll be more. So better to just tolerate. Whatever it is, if it's good, it'll be good, and if it's bad, it'll be bad. So that's also a way to consider that, you know, you're not going to change anything anyway, and you're just going to make it worse in the long run.
Very nice. Thank you. Anyone else? Ragatmika.
One time, the elder Mahavishnu Swami, who's now deceased, he was speaking to a group of grihastas in Los Angeles, and he said, the answer to all, or the solution to all problems in family life is no divorce. And he said, just like the mathematical calculation, 7 times blank equals 21. He says, you look to the answer for the solution. Hmm. To fill in the blank.
Uh-huh.
So the answer or the solution to all problems is no divorce. Then, you, like you said, you'll make it work.
Thank you. Very nice. And so the point is also, in any ashram, the example of this verse is what he did in one ashram, he succeeded, so he took that consciousness, he succeeded in another ashram. Where many of us succeed in our varna and fail in our ashram. We don't use the same shakti. So we succeed by failing somehow or other. We have it, you know what I mean? Like you fail in an ashram and that becomes your success somehow or other. Yeah, crazy. Don't succeed by failing. You know, like, I'll try to be brahmachari. Well, I failed as a brahmachari, so I'll get married. So, you didn't fail as a brahmachari. You know, it's be successful in whatever you do. That's also your success. Going to the next ashram could be, you know. But if you enter it that way, you're going with a failing mentality. Right? Okay, we can stop. So, a question or a comment? Yes.
Could take a while if it's a question, not a comment.
So if anyone wants to leave, they can go. I don't want to hold you here, and I'll take your question for the benefit of the internet, if we're on there. Yeah.
In the purport, Srila Prabhupada stresses the importance of increasing the level of austerity when one is in the vanaprastha stage of life. What is your understanding of the increased austerity that the vanaprastha should take on?
Well, I think you have two examples here. You have the example where Prabhupada kind of turns the whole varnashram system upside down by saying, you know, you dedicate your life to Krishna, you're already beyond sannyas. It's like you've transcended the whole varnashram. So I think for grihastas in that situation who are fully dedicated, they're probably already doing most of the austerity. Now, Prabhupada sometimes would award the Varnaprastha ashram to young grihastas who were dying to take sannyas. So as a concession, he could say, okay, you take Varnaprastha. And all he meant was, don't have any more kids. You know, like start winding down. And he was writing that to people who lived in that one room in the house without any furniture. So it's like, and they were going on Sankirtan all day. Now, my personal realization of austerity, that the austerity the devotees really need to perform, the most important one, and that they're not very good at in general, is japa, controlling the mind and hearing and being present with japa. That's a huge austerity. And devotees aren't good at that. And I think that's probably one of the most overlooked austerities, because we tend to look at austerity in terms of like pain on the body. Or maybe taking on a lot of responsibility and burdening ourselves. But in my work, in my own japa, in my work in doing the japa workshops, I see that the consciousness of just sitting with the holy name and just sitting and being present is one of the biggest austerities for devotees that they have the most difficulty with. You know, want to get up and walk around and walk around and think of things and just to calm down, Prabhu, just get absorbed. That, I think that's I don't know if it's the only austerity we could say, but I think it's one of the most important, in my estimation, one of the most difficult austerities for devotees. Just like, be present, and one of the most important and one of the most rewarding. Being absorbed in chanting, because there's always this consciousness of turn the mind on to channel 7, let it play it out, and I'll just chant my rounds, and I can be entertained while I'm chanting, and then I don't have to hear. There's that consciousness, you know. Sit back, relax, enjoy the flight, and chant your rounds. You go, those 16 rounds were painless. That was really good. I just went off in my mind, you know. So it's because we don't have a taste for chanting. Because no one who has a taste will do that. But when we don't have a taste, then to be sattvic, to be present, it's a real austerity to hear. I'd rather just, right? Just go away somewhere. In my mind, it's much easier. So to me, that's a huge austerity for us. One that many of us don't perform regularly. But when Prabhupada talks about vanaprastha strictly, he's talking about people who are very much engaged in material life. And then they're retiring. So the austerity is simplify, simplify. Which I think that's the real thing. Because if your life is not simple, you're not going to make it. You're just putting obstacles in front of you. So I think that's a big thing in vanaprastha. Simplify your life, you know. The husband's working, the wife's working. All right, the wife, you can stop working, sell the house, get an apartment, gradually work towards so the husband can stop or work less, you know. More time for Krishna. And, you know, why do we work so hard? Because we work hard to pay for all the things that we don't need. You know, what's maya? Maya means work hard to buy things, work hard at a job you don't like, to buy things you don't need that won't make you happy. Right? That's maya. So vanaprastha life means reverse that, you know. Stop working so hard for the things you don't need that are getting in the way of your Krishna consciousness. It's a gradual winding down, the way I see it. You want to hear a funny story? I was in Dallas, Tamal Krishnamaraj. He gave this heavy lecture on vanaprastha. Half the devotees in the temple were over 50. You've got to retire. You know, everybody's got their house and their business and their job and their nice cars and their televisions and their iPods. La di da di da da da. Right? That's your average. You know, that's just normal in America. So he gives this lecture. Vanaprastha, you're getting old. You're gonna die. You know, Prabhupada said after 50, give it up. And on and on and on. Gives this whole lecture, heavy. You know, every point. At the end of the lecture, he says, I don't know why I gave this lecture. None of you are going to do anything I said. None of you are going to do any of this. That was just, you know, so that's the that's the dilemma, you know. There's a funny joke. This man makes a deal with God. He said, give me warning when I'm going to die. Because I want to be ready for it. God says, okay. So then he dies and he goes to heaven and you know, just dies all of a sudden. He said, why didn't you tell me we had the deal? He goes, I did tell you. Your hair was falling out. It's turning gray. You know, your body was aching. The skin was wrinkling. I gave you all the signs. I was showing you. You didn't notice them. So, you know, what to do? Simple. I was just in South Africa. Life in South Africa is a lot simpler than it is in America. And I was noticing the difference in the lives of the devotees. They were much better off. It's just simpler there. Much simpler. They had more time. And I noticed the difference. Yes?
Had Keshmash told us that Shri Prabhupada told him that if we had any problems in devotional life, it's because we don't change our jhana problem.
Yes. Ultimately, yeah. Offenses to the holy name, yes. That's why I say the big austerity is to hear. you know, Bhaktisiddhanta, he gave a simple definition of aparad. He said, aparad means to chant without making the effort not to make the aparad. It's very simple. So if we're chanting, we're not making the effort to avoid the aparad, which inattention is the number one, which is the cause of the others, then we're kind of just being lazy. I mean, in a lot of japa workshops, I ask a few questions. I say, what could you do to improve? I'll give you 10 seconds. And everybody knows what they can do in the first 10 seconds. You don't have to think. You already know. So then I say, why aren't you doing it? I'm lazy. I said, you're honest. If you say I'm lazy. And so Bhaktivinoda said, what is inattention? It means you're lazy, you're apathetic, or you're distracted. So that's the real austerity for us. I think it's the most important. Because from that, everything comes. All the other austerities will come. That's my realization after, you know, facilitating a lot of japa workshops. And it's taste. You know, when you're, before you're at the level of taste, you really have to, this effort is very important. And the payment for the effort is the taste. And when we're at taste, then everything is good. No problem. You don't have to force your mind to think. You can't stop chanting. I had this nice experience with Dravida. He was, I was at a festival and I was sitting down next to him during japa, just before we started chanting, and he was talking to himself. And he was putting his hands in his beads like this. We're just sitting down right after Tulsi Puja. And he went like this, fingering his beads to get to the head bead, and said, now it's time for my favorite activity. I said, that's it. That's taste. You know. Otherwise, oh no, 2 hours, I have to control my mind. You know, isn't it? It can be. So what do you want, you know? But if you make the effort, then you'll get the Dravida drops of nectar. And then, you know, Bhaktivinoda's saying, hey, when I chant, I feel like liquid nectar is dropping in my heart. That's what I feel. So, you know, that's quite a payment for, you know, not being distracted. So that's the real austerity. And when you get a taste, then, yeah, austerity is a byproduct of, you know, simplification, renunciation, it all comes naturally. You know, people say I'm afraid to renounce, but you don't renounce when you're afraid, you renounce when you have a taste. So you don't have to be afraid to renounce, you just advance and it happens. And you don't even notice it happens, right? In the japa workshop, I ask a question, I say, if you surrender to Krishna, what are you afraid of is going to happen? And everybody's afraid of something. If I surrender, I'm afraid of something. So how can you chant if you're afraid to surrender? Because chanting is asking Krishna to surrender, right? There's a block there. But once you surrender, the detachment is just, it's, as we say in America, it's a no-brainer. It just happens, right? You don't even know what happens. It just happens. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.